Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
We've shared on VFN Radio about the amazing testimony, briefly, of R.A. Dickey, former pitcher of the New York Mets, who's now went to the Toronto Blue Jays, sad to say, for some of those New York Mets fans. But R.A. Dickey is a believer in the Lord. He is a Christian who loves God, and he has such an amazing story. Now, my sons and I were able to meet him and give him a baseball with iabide.org. We have a picture of that there on the torch, and maybe we'll make that related for you. Really nice guy. But I Am Second, I Am Second did his testimony video, and you're going to hear some of the things that happened in his past. Listen, there's so many times that all we see are the highlights in people's lives. We see when they celebrate and do great things and great things happen to them. But we don't realize that there's a story behind the story. Everybody has a story. Now everybody can communicate it in a way that maybe could hold your attention and, you know, fill in all the details for you. But let me tell you, everyone has a story, and people just don't arrive to a certain place. And R.A. Dickey's no different. He has a story. He was hurt. He was abused. And a lot of that abuse was undetected. You know, it wasn't, it never, you know, people never really knew what happened to him. And so you see people sometimes that struggle with issues, and you're like, what's your problem? Or you think that, you know, they just need to fix themselves. Well, people have been through things. People have been through some things, and not everyone can communicate and tell you. And the devil does. The devil does an amazing job, if you will, by working people over and causing them to feel shame, causing them to feel guilt, condemning themselves, even drawing them into more sin. And, you know, where they become so clouded that they can't even be able to open up and share with anybody. Let me tell you, it's so important that you have relationship in your life. It's so important that you don't become in your life a solo island where it's just about you getting up to work, coming home, you and your family, and that's it. Listen, we need to have genuine relationships, especially in the body of Christ, where we're walking alongside brothers and sisters. The Bible says that we need to carry each other's burden, and therefore fulfill the law of Christ by loving on each other and taking the time to find out how we're doing, what's going on. You'll be surprised with a cup of coffee and some time with someone will open up. And there's something about sharing and talking. I know that we've spent some time, many years, putting together small men's groups and and building relationship and talking and sharing. Isn't it an amazing dynamic when you just take the time to get out of yourself just to be there for somebody else and listen to their story?
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, that's probably one of the most... memorable times I've had in my walk with God is, you know, being able to, you know, be received from other men.
Yeah.
And also be able to speak into other man's life.
Yeah.
You know, it's just awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
Because we're all, you know, we're all the same. We're not different. You know what I'm saying? We all have struggles. We all have, you know, there's no difference.
There is no difference. And that's what the thing that the devil would try to make it seem like you're the only one that's been through this, or you're the only one that's had this trial, or nobody would understand. Hey, listen, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new. And especially when you get genders together, you get all men together and all women together. It's amazing. You put all women, all different, you know, races and backgrounds and different economic classes, but you get them together and they can just talk forever and all connect. And same thing, you get a bunch of men together. When men come together, it's the same thing. There's just something about that bond that where they can begin to share. You need someone. Yeah. You need someone in your life that you can open up to and you can share the real deal. I want you to listen to R.A. Dickey's testimony. And listen, last year he was the National League Cy Young Award winner. That means he was the number one best pitcher of all the pitchers in the National League. He was awarded the top award. But he didn't get there overnight. God did amazing, amazing work in his life. I want you to listen up.
I remember the sound. I remember the sound of jingling. I remember being in the back seat counting them. tree marks sitting in like the dotted line of a driveway with a rubber hose duct tape to the exhaust pipe.
We came to the place into where the Rangers offered me a contract that was, I think it was like $810,000 plus.
Pummel him money for with all my might. And the word spread, and before I knew it, I was in my underwear on the banks of the Missouri River. And so I said, I'm going to do it.
Where does your story begin?
I think when my parents separated, I just felt incredibly lonely. The first time that it ever happened was with a female babysitter. I was 8. You know, your mom drops you off and nobody's there except you and her. And, you know, the next thing you know, you're in the dark and you're sweating and your clothes are off and you don't know why and you don't know what's going on. And it's a very confusing thing. My most vivid memory is the smells. The smell of the room, the smell of the dark, the smell of my own perspiration, you know. It just smelled like something was happening that shouldn't be happening. I remember like about the third or fourth time thinking, okay, just do what you're gonna do and let's get it over with. But the incident later in that summer when a male assaulted me was worse. It was borderline violent. It was violent. I was by kind of a garage, dilapidated garage. It was a stranger. I knew that I was about to be raped. I knew it was coming. I went somewhere else, and then I came back. It was awful. And I remember like looking up from the ground and seeing that guy like, running away. And I remember the sound. I remember the sound of like his belt buckle jingling. One of the things that happens when you're abused is you feel less than human. And for me, that's what I felt like. Do I even matter? Why should I be here? You know, if that can happen to me, then I surely must be less than an ant. All my acumen was built on trying to forget it, not tell anybody. I prayed to receive Christ when I was 13, and once I even, you know, said, Lord, this has happened to me. Can you take it away? Can you take the feelings away? Can you take the shame, the hurt, the feelings of inadequacy, the wounds? Can you close them up? And so my expectation was, I think, initially that they would be instantly healed. And when they weren't, I had a lot of anger about that too, when I felt like, you know, here I am taking the risk with you, Lord, and yet I don't feel any different. Within sport, I found that I could control my destiny. If you worked hard enough, if you executed the right mechanic, if you followed the formula as an athlete, then you would be rewarded for that. So that was a way that I not only escaped, but found a lot of validation and a lot of identity as I grew into an adolescent, a teenager, and a young man. I think my happiness came from being good at baseball. I accepted a scholarship to the University of Tennessee. Ended up being a first-round draft pick by the Texas Rangers. I felt fantastic. They had offered me a contract that was, I think it was like $810,000 plus some money for school if I ever wanted to go back to school, but certainly more money than I had ever thought about having. I hopped on a plane and flew down to Arlington, Texas. I dreamt about pitching in the big leagues since I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old. I'm getting to do it. I mean, here it is. We head to the doctor's office. They put me through all kinds of tests. I feel like I passed every one. You know, I didn't have anything to hide. I never missed a bullpen, much less a start in college. Headed to the stadium, and I was going to get to meet Nolan Ryan, who was a childhood idol of mine. And so we get up there to the offices. My agent comes to get me, and his eyes looked watery, and he took me in the office where Doug Melvin, who was the general manager of the Texas Rangers at the time, told me that they were going to take the offer off the table because they felt like there was something wrong with my elbow. They weren't sure that they were even gonna sign me. And it was all I could do in the moment not to reach over the desk and pummel him with all my might. And I remember standing up in that moment and feeling this, like, what seemed for me to be like a wind, like a, just a feeling wash over me. And the feeling was, it's okay, I've got you. And that's all I remember. It just opened up a lot of what I had felt as a damaged youth after being abused, you know, just you're inadequate and you're broken and nobody, we don't want anything to do with you. I'd been just barely hanging on and had a wife to support who was abandoning everything to help me chase my dream. And we fought a lot and I felt like, you know, I couldn't provide what she needed. Again, there was that motif, that pattern of feeling inadequate. My velocity had really dropped. What once was a 92 mile an hour sinker was now like an 86 mile an hour sinker. I could see the writing on the wall. What I had to offer, it was time to say goodbye to that and embrace something new if I wanted to keep going and chasing a dream. I had thrown a knuckleball and some bullpens in practice, and Oral Hershiser noticed that I had a pretty good one. And so they suggested to me to become a full-time knuckleball pitcher in 2005. I accepted their invitation. I went down to AAA again. I'm going to try to learn the pitch. When I came to spring training in 2006, I came as a full-time knuckleballer for the first time in my career and had all this hope of breaking with the team, being one of the starters and really getting to do it differently. And sure enough, I made the team. And in my first outing in 2006, I tied a modern-day major league record for the most home runs given up in a game with 6. And promptly got sent down the next day. And not just sent down, but taken off the roster. I was just at the end of myself. In my darkest moment, I was sitting in a driveway with a rubber hose duct taped to the exhaust pipe and run into the driver's side window with the window rolled up and a towel packed around the slit that that window created with my hand on the key. The only thing that saved me in that moment was that feeling that God was sitting right beside me in the passenger seat and whispering to me all the while, do not turn that key, I've got something else for you. And so I didn't. In 2007, I found myself in Omaha, Nebraska, playing the AAA affiliate. We stay at the hotel on the banks of the Missouri River. I was 32 years old, father of 3, and contemplating getting down in my underwear and trying to swim across the Missouri River. Like, how legendary would it be if I were able to traverse the Missouri River in front of my teammates? Man, that would go down in history. Started swimming out. I noticed that the current's pretty heavy. I've had my head down now for about, 5 or 6 minutes. I'm gonna look and see where I am. I can't see anybody. The current's so fast that it had taken me several hundred yards down river already. I'm starting to really get fatigued. Not only was the current strong, sweeping me down river, but the undertow was incredible. My muscles were burning, the lactic acid was building up and was sucking me under so I could barely tread water. There is no way that I can get to the other side, I don't think. It was either keep pressing on and die trying to do this thing, gain your validation through this act, or turn around, swallow your pride, and try to make it back to shore and survive. So I started stroking back to the bank and quickly became apparent that I wasn't gonna make it. I didn't have anything left. I couldn't hardly lift my arm to stroke. I finally just surrendered. It's an incredible sensation, and to feel what it's like to cry underwater, but I was weeping, saying how sorry I was to God for leaving my family and leaving my kids without a father. A split second before I opened my mouth to take in the water so that it would end more quickly, I felt my feet hit the bottom. I pushed myself up and I felt a little bit of an adrenaline surge and was able to pump out a couple more strokes until I could see the bank. Fortunately for me, I had a singular teammate named Grant Balfour who had run the distance. He was up ahead of me and he had his hand outreached. And I survived. I survived that when I had totally surrendered myself to the end. My life from that point on really centered around trying to live the next 5 minutes well, whatever that meant. I invited Anne, my wife, in to tell her for the first time about my abuse and my story. I was totally ready for her to walk out because that's what I felt like I deserved. And she did the opposite. And she completely embraced me despite what I felt like was the ugliest things about me and about my past. I began to risk things, risk relationship, risk trusting people, risk trusting other men, which I had never been able to do. And I began to discover that God was in the middle of all of it. Like he has designed me for relationship. When I started to care less about what my performance was and more about the process, I began to be better. I began to get better as a baseball player. And also, that paralleled my growth as a human being. For so long, I had hung on so tightly to my career, to my identity as an athlete, as a baseball player. And it seemed like God was just like cranking my fingers back so that he could get at it the way that he wanted it. And I got to the place where I wanted to open my hand and he didn't have to pry my fingers back. The knuckleball can be a metaphor for what it's like to let go. When you throw a knuckleball, well, the only thing that you care about is releasing the ball towards its target without spin. And to release a ball that doesn't spin, You have to surrender to the outcome in a way that you don't with other pitches. For me personally, God's in my mechanic too. He's in the process. So the surrender for me doesn't happen when I release the pitch. It happens when I wake up in the morning. Having to surrender to every moment from then until I close my eyes again at night. I think the complete surrender is what I'm most infatuated by. My name is Ari Dickey, and I am second.
Wasn't that amazing?
That was powerful.
Man, that is powerful. This guy went through all sorts of stuff. What he didn't share in that testimony, I mean, you only could say so much, and what he did say was powerful, was that he grew up in a home where his mom was working all the time, and his parents were divorced. He had no relationship with his father. And I believe his mom was a waitress at a bar, I think. He wrote a great book last year called, subtitles, Wherever I Wind Up. It's R.A. Dickey, and he wrote it with Wayne Coffey. And really, it's a great book. It's Wherever I Wind Up, My Quest for Truth, Authenticity, and the Perfect Knuckleball. And you hear all the stuff that he went through, man. This guy was abused.
Yeah.
You know, he was sexually abused. He was raped. And it affected him the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about so many people that have gone through stuff today that were abused, or things that went wrong in their life, maybe, you know, suffered a great tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dealing with things today the best way they know how, but their best way they know how is still not good enough. It's still not the right way. I mean, you're still crashing. You're still messing up stuff. You're still...
Mm-hmm.
Not doing what you need to do because it just doesn't work out. And to live with that type of shame and guilt and really torment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly what's going on.
And when you see a guy going through something like that and you hear R.A. Dickey's story, your heart melts because you say, man, you know, you can identify. You've have your own pain, your own struggles, the things that you went through. And it's not easy to talk about these things. One, because, you know, first of all, it hurts, you know, and second of all, you need God. You need God to help you to process and to bring healing really to your heart, healing to your soul, to your emotions. And he goes all his life through this whole, you know, carrying this thing.
Yeah.
And he winds up finding an outlet. And thank God he did,
mm-hmm.
in baseball. And so his life has been like one giant... huge struggle because he's trying to make it in the major leagues, and he's being offered this contract only to find out that there's something wrong, supposedly something wrong with his arm,
right?
His ligament. It's not even supposed to be able to twist a doorknob without him being in excruciating pain.
What people couldn't see was they said that it was actually a ligament was actually missing from his elbow.
Yeah.
And it was a mystery on how he could even throw at all. And he's been throwing for years like that without a ligament.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
I mean, without a ligament in your knee, I could barely walk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I can imagine trying to throw a ball.
Well, think about this. You know how they found out he was on, he made it to the Olympic team, baseball Olympic team, and he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated with four other baseball players. And how they first noticed this thing was when they looked at the picture and noticed that his arm was hanging down a little bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Just a simple, I mean, if they never would have saw that picture, that's what started them having him check out and to get an MRI, because they had no understanding, mm-hmm. you know, what was going on with his arm.
Yeah.
But they saw that picture of their new recruit and said, something's not right there. Take the littlest things. And to have $810,000 just pulled out from underneath you.
Wow, that had been devastating.
And you're flying up there. It's more money. I mean, he grew up very, very, you know, kind of poor and mm-hmm. just no funds. And this was like, you know, millionaire status, and just taken away.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's amazing. He struggles into the minor leagues. He finally gets signed for $75,000, not even 10% of what he originally was offered.
Yeah, right.
And then for something like 9 years, he's going to the minor leagues. In his book, he writes how he didn't even have money oftentimes to drive down to the ballpark, so he would find an apartment for him and his family close enough to the ballpark where he could ride his bike.
Oh, wow.
His bike to practice. Wow. Listen, when we come back in the extra hour, we're going to talk about some of the real struggles that we face, some of the real struggles that are out there, and how they can only be healed in Jesus Christ. I want to encourage you today that if you're struggling, that you've been hurt, and you've been suffering, and you just don't know how to end it all. You don't know how to get healing. You don't know how to get past it. We want to encourage you that Jesus is the only way to be healed from the inside out. We talked about some of the pain that he went through, some of the trials, some of the things that affected his life, where so many people said it was over for him. You know, it was absolutely over. And he's 9 years in the minor leagues. 9 years and struggling and doing all the things just to try to make it. Not having enough income to take care of his family.
Mm-hmm.
3 children. And at one point, because he's trying to find validation, he's trying to make it, you know, trying to say, I have an identity. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about more about identity in this extra hour. But he tries to swim across the Missouri River. I mean, the Missouri River.
Yeah.
And winds up almost losing his life.
Yeah.
I mean, he was about...
It was over.
It was about to be done. It's over for him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, I've heard stories like this, you know, where it's like, I just want to prove myself. I just want to make a name for myself. I just want to be known. And today, they did a study on young people and what young people want to be today more than anything, more than success, more than money. They want to be famous. Mm-hmm. They want to be famous. And you see these YouTube channels where they're just making videos for, I mean, the most silliest and outrageous things.
Crazy stuff.
Putting themselves in harm's way and danger, all types of these different little experiments. And just because they want to be recognized, they want to be known. Someone finds something uniquely good about me and let me know it. Please share it with me. Which goes to show you how powerful it is. It's just to say a kind word to somebody and to praise, especially a young person, for something good in their life. And, you know, sometimes parents can do it, and they often do it, but it's nothing like another person outside of the family, an aunt, an uncle, or friend,
mm-hmm.
that says something positive to another, you know, young person, child. Those words speak life. The power of life and death is in the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And we can speak life over someone, or we can speak death.
Right.
And so he goes through these struggles, and it was almost done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And came to a point in his life where he was so rock bottom. He didn't even think he had it anymore. It was done. His baseball thing is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to give up on his career. Prior to that, by the way, he could have cashed in on a $1 million policy on his arm. And as soon as the Texas Rangers pulled away that contract,
mm-hmm.
he could have cashed in on $1 million. But he would never... When you cash in, he can never try to play baseball again. I mean, that was it. I mean, take the $1 million because your arm, you're saying your arm is bad. His arm was insured.
Oh, wow.
You can't take the money and then try out next year.
Right, right.
Mm. Or pursue the dream.
Mm.
He's a college guy at the time. He rejected the policy.
Wow.
And pursued the dream.
Wow.
16 years later.
Wow.
He wins the National Cy Young Award. He goes through this journey. But before that, so you see him on the stage and you see him with a multi-$1 million contract today. You see him winning the most prestigious award in baseball for a pitcher. I mean, some people pitch their whole entire career and never even, you know, come close to winning one.
Yeah.
In their whole career. And this man makes it and wins one. But he comes to a point in his life and in his testimony where he was about to end it all. I mean, he was about to end it all because the shame was so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's real.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember many years ago, you know, I can relate on in so many different areas.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all can, right? I
mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, through different circumstances, but there was a time in my life where I went through a lot of shame and you know, I felt like I wanted to end it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at 19 years old,
yeah.
You know, I'd had a stroke that had left the left side of my body completely paralyzed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And
this is before you knew God, right?
Yeah, this is before I knew God. And, you know, I went through years of a lot of, just struggled with, you know, with shame and, you mm-hmm. know, and fear. You know, I didn't want to go out in public. And, but I remember specifically at probably the point that most of it entered is after I had the stroke, I had, my mother had taken me out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were sitting in the middle of this restaurant and, you know, I'd ordered a steak and, you know, my arm didn't work. You know, it was paralyzed.
Because what happened? You were paralyzed.
I was paralyzed.
From where?
From
the whole left side.
The whole left side of my body.
So the whole left side of your body, I guess that included your face?
Including my face, yeah.
So that one side of your face, you had
right,
no
I had
emotion.
To use a straw to drink or else the liquid would just pour out of my face, out of my mouth.
So your face was paralyzed, your arm was paralyzed, and mm-hmm. so that couldn't function.
Right. It just, yeah, it wouldn't function at all. And
was your talking impaired, by the way?
Yeah, somewhat, you know, because my mouth was, you know, so yeah, I would slur a lot mm-hmm. when I spoke. And so, you know, we were sitting in the middle of this restaurant and, you know, I'm 19 years old, you know, young man, you know, mm-hmm. thought I was a strapping young lad,
right?
You know, and then I had to have my mother cut up my steak so that I could eat.
Wow.
In the middle of this restaurant. And I remember the feeling, just this huge flood came in of just embarrassment, shame, and you know, it just really, really hit me. It was really impacting me from that moment on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so I mean, I even had to have her basically dress me. I mean,
right.
She had to button my shirts, my pants, tie my shoes. You know, because I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And to come from, you know, being a young man, being able to do all these things for myself, uh-huh. and then I'm back to this point in my life where you're basically a baby who's having to be taken care of,
uh-huh.
you know, who's, you know, it's almost like going back on a bottle, you yeah. know, because you're having to use a straw to drink, mm. and, you know, and you can't do for yourself the way that you could before. And so many years I struggled with that and was depressed. You know, many times I wanted to end it all, you know, so I can totally relate
mm-hmm.
to those feelings. And, but it was God that pulled me out of that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I mean, cause I, you know, I got to the bottom. I mean, I got into drugs and all kind of things, just trying to take this pain away. And then, but you know, nothing I did worked.
Right.
You know, nothing helped.
Right.
And then,
Even smoking your Bible.
Not even smoking my Bible. Yeah. You know, ran out of, you know, rolling papers and decided to, you know, hey, this paper's pretty thin in this book.
Oh goodness.
You know,
the white page.
Yeah. There was no pages. So, you know, I didn't smoke the,
wouldn't smoke the ink.
No, I didn't want to get poisoned by the ink.
Oh, poison. I thought you right. wanted yeah. to respect the word.
Yeah. Come a long way.
But think about it, man. You are a testament. We all are.
Yeah.
I mean, of where we've come from,
mm-hmm.
bottomless, and that God will breathe life into what is dead. You know, and talk about rebuilding on God.
Oh, yeah.
And today, you know, your life is like completely different, nowhere near.
Yeah. Yeah, God brought me back from the bottom. You know, like you said, I had hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know.
That's so important. Hitting bottom is so important because so many people fight not to hit bottom or right. to acknowledge mm-hmm. the state that they're in. But you got to hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You got to hit bottom. If you're broke, you're broke. You know what I'm saying? You're not in debt, you're broke. You're busted. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? If you're out, you're out. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is, you got to deal with reality so that you can actually begin to start moving in a different direction. And hopefully you're just going to cry out to God and let God do what you couldn't do on your own. That's the whole thing. If we could fix ourselves, we would.
Yeah.
And it's our continual trying to fix ourselves, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work, obviously, that should cause us to say, I need God in my life. I need God in my life. And I think about when Ari Dickey, he's about to swim across the Missouri River, mm-hmm. and he's about to drown and, like, give it all up and surrender. His feet actually hit the bottom of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking
imagine
of bottom.
Imagine that, hitting bottom.
Wow. His feet actually hit the bottom of the river and had this other chance. And it's kind of like a... an analogy for his life. He said, at that point, I realized that I'm going to live for the next 5 minutes of my life. I'm going to live in the moment. Mm. You know, I'm going to enjoy, you know, my life. And a lot of people miss so much of life, so much of wonderful moments that they could enjoy. They could enjoy. You can make a choice to enjoy them, but you're so depressed over what's going to happen next week. You're so depressed and taken down about these temporary, momentary troubles or fires at your feet. You're taken down by something that is not, you don't even know what's going to happen. It's just the thought that it could happen, and that alone is overwhelming you,
mm-hmm.
that it's not allowing you to enjoy simple, beautiful moments that God has packed in a 24-hour period called the day.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many wonderful moments that could be seized, conversations that could be enjoyed, so many. But you can't get past them. So he hit bottom, and then he learned this new pitch called the knuckleball. And the thing about a knuckleball, he is the only major league knuckleballer to win the National Cy Young Award. I think he's only like one of two. I think he may be just the only knuckleball pitcher right now presently in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to reinvent himself as a ball player. And so the knuckleball is a pitch that you really don't throw at your knuckles. You kind of claw it, and you sink your nails in the ball, your fingernails, and you release the ball. When you throw in a baseball, the way you get high velocity off of a baseball, call it a two-seam pitch where you get your fingers over the two seams, or throwing a fastball, you putting your fingers across the seam. The whole idea is to get a lot of velocity and speed, and you want the ball to spin. You want the ball to spin fast so that it'll go fast too. Well, the idea with a knuckleball is that there's no spin at all. There's no spin in this pitch. So it's kind of just floating.
Floating in air.
And the idea is that when you throw release it, it does. It has a mind of its own. It breaks all different patterns. And the idea is it throws the pitcher completely off because he sees this ball that's kind of just basically lobbed.
He's throws
just,
who off?
The batter.
Okay.
Ball, normally, the batter's normally... you know, used to seeing balls that are thrown 90 to 100 miles an hour.
Right.
And here you got this ball that's coming in at 60, 70. He's thinking, I'm going to crush this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then the ball all of a sudden dips to the left and it winds up striking out. It makes, you know, I think about those.
Makes old, you look like a fool,
yeah,
I'm sure.
I think about those old Popeye cartoons where the guy's trying to swing, you know, 10 times at the pitch, you know, and he's, and he misses, you know.
Right.
It's one of those type of pitches.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about the pitch is that once you release it, you have to surrender its outcome. You don't know.
You don't know what it's going to do.
You don't know what it's going to do. And the thing for a pitcher is that you got to have good control. You have this little narrow strike zone. It's a box.
Yeah.
You got to get the ball in the box or it's going to be a ball. You're going to walk the guy or the guy's going to crush it and hit a home run. And so it takes a lot of faith just to release it and let it go and hope that it does the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot like life, and who would have thought that God would have used a man that was, you know, going all over the place and gives him a pitch, and because he cries out to God, invites God into his life, you know, the Lord heals him, saves him, and uses a ball. A ball's an analogy only for his life, but now preaching to the world that all you got to do is surrender your life to Jesus. All you got to do is throw your life. Don't worry about the outcome. How is it going to look? What people going to think about you? All the different things that you get caught up with it mean nothing. When it's all said and done, when it's all over at the end of your life, let me tell you something. We have a lot of people, young people listen to us on VFN radio, all different ages and all different backgrounds. But if you're a young person today, listen, you're never going to see your high school friends ever again, more than likely.
Mm.
Stop living for these young people that we call friends or, you know, older folks. This is a good advice for you too. Live for Jesus. Surrender your life. Surrender it all. Bring it to the point where you say, you know, God, I'm just going to stop striving and stop planning and stop trying to fix myself up, and I'm just going to give you my life and whatever life that I have. Whatever, however way this thing comes on out, I'm going to choose to enjoy it, and I'm going to allow you to heal me, restore me, and guess what? Hopefully one day use me. We want to encourage you today that just like R.A. Dickey, Chris, and listen, wear your scars as medals. Wear your scars as medals. Allow God to use what happened in your past so that he can heal you, one, and then two, so that you can help others. Listen, if you're hurting today, there's nothing that you have gone through, nothing that you're presently going through that Jesus cannot bring you back from. There is always, always hope in God. You just got to reach out to him. And Chris was sharing, too, about some of the struggles and challenges he had before he came to the Lord when he was a strapping young lad, as he said. And
so what are you now?
Well, let's not even go there. But God healed Chris.
Yes.
God healed Chris. Chris is no longer paralyzed. And he has full functioning of everything in his body. He can drink with a straw now.
Without a straw.
Cut his own meat.
Cut my own meat. Butt my own buttons.
There you go.
Run a marathon.
Well.
Now you're going over. But God is good.
If I was in shape, I could.
The point here is God is good.
Right.
And God touched them. And God healed them. And listen, if God can do it for Chris and R.A. Dickey, let me tell you, he can do it for you.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Don't forget to share it with your friends. Find out more and listen to the daily VFN radio program in its entirety at VFNTV.com or with your mobile VFN TV app on your mobile phone or device. That's VFNTV.com.